Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to the inaugural premiere of From the Heart. I'm Mary Thompson Hunt, and I'm here with my partner, Joshua Vickery, and we are so excited. It's our very first show on Radio 107.7.
Yay, this is such a very cool opportunity, Mary, and I would not want to do this with anyone else.
Oh, thank you, Joshua.
It's going to be so fun. So this show is going to be all about our arts community. It's going to be all about the leaders that shape this community when it comes to the arts and about the artists themselves. But we're also going to be promoting shows and getting you, our listeners, to fall in love with the arts in a whole new way. So hopefully that will happen and transpire as we journey through this together.
Let's tell everyone how we got started and who we are.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we met at Disney. We had the American Idol experience at Disney's Hollywood Studios. And, you know, I just really fell in love with who you are as a person from day one. And if you don't know Mary Thompson Hunt, hopefully you will as you listen to the show. But she's one of the most authentic, genuine people I have ever met. And I really do mean that, Mary. You didn't pay me to say that, I promise. but really, you know, you really are. And so we clicked. We got to know each other and learned each other's backgrounds and experiences. And you had a show, a chat talk conversation show called Converse. And you had me on as a guest and you rolled out the red carpet for me. Everything that was important to me, you brought into that conversation in front of a live audience, and you had my nieces and nephews, who I adore. Hello, Landon and Alyssa and Allie. And Jackson. I just named four. There's not four. There's three. but you had them on there, and you had CFC Arts did a flash mob, and you had all these messages from people that I loved and cared about. And I thought, wow, I need to partner with this wonderful woman in a big way.
I love that. Well, for me, so that you all can meet my co-host, Joshua Vickery, is probably one of the kindest people I met. That was such a generous thing for you to do, because after that performance of Converse, you said, you want to partner up together and do something like this, but with leaders of the arts. And like, wow, leaders, arts, two of my favorite subjects. Let's do it. So after the performance that we did there, I call it a performance, we had Terry Olson as our first guest at the library, and we had one audience member, my husband. thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.
And what a great conversation that was. We taped it, and Terry on the way home said, people should know about this. I remember it was the day that Trader Joe's opened, because we went to Trader Joe's in Winter Park, and by the time I got home, we had 8 calls of people from Terry saying, well, we'd like to meet with you. We'd like to meet with you. And soon thereafter, we met Bill Suki over at Vision TV, Orange TV, and we left there and went, we just picked out our set. We have a talk show.
Yeah, we had a talk show, and it was wonderful for a year, and we really had some great conversations with so many fantastic leaders in this community, and hopefully we're going to have all of them back on the radio show. And then after that journey for a while, that door closed, and now this wonderful opportunity has opened here at Magic 107.7. And we are so lucky to be able to do this. And we're going to meet so many great people who influence through us. So that's kind of how we met and how we got our journey going and got
together.
It started. Yeah, together.
But individually, your background is music. Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, so I started in church music, and then I went to Disney Entertainment. And then I started Central Florida Community Arts, which is a wonderful non-for-profit arts organization. Doing some really cool things in our community. And we consist of about 400 singers and multiple choirs and a 136-member symphony orchestra and youth programs and a theater and all of that. And I have a wonderful team that I want to give a shout-out to. But that is my life. Day in and day out is really connecting the arts to the local community and the local artist. And it's been a fantastic journey so far.
What I like about what you did, and you one day said this to me, when you were working at Idol, people would come in with beautiful voices and you'd say, wow, where do you get to sing? And they'd say, nowhere. And you realize there were so many people with great voices that had nowhere to sing. And you thought, I see a need. And then you started with your laptop, right?
Yeah, we did. And we just really went into all these different people's homes and we pitched the idea of the choir. And that's how it started. And it just exploded.
Amazing.
And we've seen such great success because there is a great need for something like this, because this area is a mecca for fantastic talent and great performers. And we don't want them to be losing the spirit of being on the stage. And that's really how we started. And now we're having conversations about how do we create more programming which is a really cool thing for for the arts world here in Central Florida. There is so much great talent. Yeah. So that's my world is Central Florida Community Arts and being able to give people a platform here in this area to do what they love. But so, Mary, tell us about what you do. I mean, I know all about what you do, but tell the listeners your life.
Well, I'm an improvisationalist. I started out in New York City. My first audition after college was for an improv group, and I got in it and fell in love with it, making things up as we go along, a la Whose Line Is It Anyway, mostly short form but long form for those improvisers who know what that means. But what I love about improvisation is that we mirror our society. We have a little fun with it. And also, I love how I've cultivated who I've become as a result of improvisation, meaning improv, there's a big rule of the yes and type of thing. You want to embrace what's instead of fighting what comes your way, almost like a keto. But I love living life that way. I started saying yes to things that ordinarily I would say no to. Like, do you want to go out? Sure, let's do that, as opposed to no. So I found myself more curious in life. Mm. I found myself more playful in life. I was telling this story just last night to a friend of mine. I was at Costco yesterday, and this little short old man, about 75, had this big box of Cheerios in his arms, and he was on the phone, and he was trying to keep hold. He goes, no, it's good for you. It's not got much sugar in it. All right, I'm putting it back. And you can just tell the whole story. He's trying to put it up on, and I just like run over with a smile on my face. I get the whole thing. His wife's chewing him out. You don't need him. And I take it from him. I put it up, and he looks at me like, I got this. It's all good. It's all good. You go. And he just kind of nodded. No, no, I put it back. And he walks away. And it just made me laugh. But in improv, you're taught, you know, you see a need, you go in, you dig in it, you help him out in the scene. And I love living my life that way. So that's why I love improvisation, and that's what I do. And I also love conversing with people. I love conversation.
You're just beautiful at the art of conversation. You know how to get people to talk about what really makes them who they are. Mm-hmm. What do you think is some of the coolest things you've done, Mary? Give us like your top three coolest things you've done in your career.
Well, first thing I was going to think of was not my career. One is marrying Jason Hunt.
We love you, Jason Hunt.
We love you, Jason Hunt. You owe me money. And then I've done 6 major bike rides for raising money for AIDS, from San Francisco to L.A., Raleigh to D.C., Niagara Falls to Manhattan, and 3 from Orlando to Miami. Let's see, I built grain elevators across the country. I co-hosted the Maury Povich Show. I was on From Earth to the Moon. What else have I done?
Didn't you do something for the Pentagon? Weren't you telling us that? Are you allowed to say that?
I can say that, sure. Okay.
Is there a censor button on this thing?
Well, I was voice of Epcot for 10 years. I still am one of the official voices of Disney. But my biggest voiceover claim to fame, yes, the outgoing message machine at the Pentagon, ladies and gentlemen. Hello. For Army, press 1. For Navy, press 2. For Air Force, press 3. For Color Guard, is it Color Guard? No, Coast Guard.
And now you are no longer the voice of the Pentagon.
Oh, yeah. So. I don't know why I lost that job.
Fun why it lasted. Well, Mary, you know, I'll tell you, the reason why I'm so just excited about this show is, you know, part of the every day that I live my life is to make the arts accessible and affordable and approachable to people. And I think this radio show will really help us, whether you're in your car or in your living room or you're hearing this on iHeartRadio, you know, I think this is going to really help bring the arts to you and make it come to life and make it approachable for you. And we'll be able to really take artists and leaders and be able to help them share their visions and what makes them, what drives them. So that's really why I'm excited about the show. Why are you excited about the show?
Well, I'm a connector. I love connecting people, and I love connecting ideas. And I love the idea, just as you said, that we can have people here, and someone who might just happen to be listening, even today, later, when we start talking about the Beauty and the Beast, that maybe they never knew the non-Disney version, or maybe they've never seen a ballet, and they're going to go. And we've connected people. We've helped instigate a good thing, because art is a good thing.
Yeah, and listeners, you know, we want to make this radio show about you as well. So we want to hear from you about who are the people that you want to meet in this arts community. I know some of you have been to a great show or a great play at Mad Cow Theater or the Orlando Philharmonic or at the Fringe Festival, and you want to meet somebody. Let us know, because we want to bring the arts to your living room and to your drive home. on a Sunday night. So we want to hear from you for sure.
And when we say the arts, it's not necessarily just the musicians and dancers and painters. It's maybe a culinary artist, maybe someone that has found the art of gardening, or you can be creative as any artist is. One of the things that I love about art is it's an intention. It's not just always, what would you call it? Not just always an activity, but an intention.
Mm. Yeah, and it's an expression as mm-hmm. well. Why do you think the arts are important, Mary?
Well, at the end of the day, when they dig up ruins, they pull out artifacts that help describe who these people were. And what do we look at? We look at what they carved into stone, or what they drew, or what they wrote. And so art is going to tell our story.
I love that. Did you think of that before, or do you just...
No, I've heard...
It's how you really feel.
I've heard people say versions of it, but I do believe that's true. Do you?
Oh, I absolutely believe that. And I'm such a strong believer in that the arts truly can change a life. Mm-hmm. I've seen that in our own organization, and on my journey in the arts, I've seen someone come to us with no confidence in a deep, dark place in their life. And I've seen the arts radically change mm-hmm. who they are and instill in them the things they need to keep going. I can't tell you how many times in a choir practice that I've led where somebody has walked out and said, I needed that to get me through my week.
Mm-hmm.
That was my refuge. That was my oasis.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I think that is what, and I don't think, I know that's what the arts do. That's what the arts do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to be our job on this show, Mary, I think.
Okay.
Is to make sure that the listeners understand that
yes.
the arts are an oasis.
An oasis.
They're a refuge.
And a way to be validated, to count. I love that you said confidence. I love that.
So, I mean, we love the arts, but what do you do when you're not hosting a radio? This is a radio show. by the way, we love radio because we can just be chilled, and I don't have to wear a tie, which is great.
I have very little makeup on.
But you still look beautiful. But what
Aww.
Do you do when you're not hosting a radio show?
I love my friends. I love looking after Jace. His work is amazing. One day we'll have Jason on, and you'll get to hear about his artwork. That's interesting. He draws. Well, we'll figure it out.
He can talk to us about what does he feel
his
when
philosophy.
He's...
philosophy. He's quite the philosophy.
What he's drawing. Yeah.
And also, I'm working on a project of the art of conversation using improvisation. I'm going to start a class soon using improv techniques to help people realize that they can have a conversation with anyone, anytime.
Yeah, and I love that you just said the art of conversation, because this show also, we want to be able to bring to light that there are so many, like you said, culinary arts and the art of conversation and the art of leadership and mm-hmm. visual arts and performing arts.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things that make up the culture of arts. And we want to make sure that our listeners and our community really understand that without that, quality of life is different, that we really need all of those things for quality of life.
We do. The artists are our mirrors, and then we mirror them, then we mirror them back, and then we are the artist, and then we're not. It's a beautiful cycle.
Who's one of your favorite artists?
Performing artists, visual artists? Let me think about this. Well, I'm going to be, right off the top of my head, Jason comes to mind only because I see from his inside out who he is and how he produces what he does. And I think an artist needs to be authentic, and he is authentic with his work.
Yeah, I like that word authentic about artists. I think, you know, artists, whether we are talking to someone who's leading an arts organization or somebody who's actually on the stage or somebody who's painting the set or whatever it may be, it's really an extension of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so authentic, because it really is a part of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to probably hear all about that with our guest today as we talk to Julian and Arcadian. You know, as what has happened in their mind is now transplanted onto paper and then going to be live in front of an
mm-hmm.
audience. That really is an extension of who you are.
Well, next time we get to talk like this, I want to know who your favorite artist is.
Yeah, I'll be happy to tell you. I have
okay.
tons of them.
I wish we had more time. Where did it go?
I know. So, Mary, this is exciting. This starts our journey
Aww.
Right here. And we are so very grateful for all those that have made this happen. We hope that you'll listen in every Sunday night. This is our inaugural radio show of From the Heart. And we have today our guests are Robert Hill, the artistic director of the Orlando Ballet, and Arcadian Broad and Julian Bond, the brilliant geniuses behind Beauty and the Beast, happening next week. So thank you for listening. You're tuned back to the next segment, and this is From the Heart on Magic 107.7.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Mary Thompson Hunt. I'm here with Joshua Vickery. We are so happy to be here for our first From the Heart. And we're very excited because on this segment, we have our special guest, Robert Hill, Artistic Director of the Orlando Ballet. Welcome, Robert.
Woo-hoo. Hi. How you guys doing?
We're great. We're so excited to have you, Robert. And you have so many exciting things to talk about, I am sure. Things that have just transpired at the wonderful Orlando Ballet, but also things that are up and coming. And today, our show is about getting to know each other with Mary and I, but also to really talk about Beauty and the Beast that is coming up just next week at the Dr. Phillips Center. So tell us all about Beauty and the Beast from the artistic director perspective.
Well, it's very exciting. And we're also very excited to do our first collaboration with Central Florida Community Arts.
Yay. I'm raising the roof if you can't see me, which you can't.
Yeah, that's what I love about radio.
Yes.
Beauty and the Beast. Well, you know, when we, 2 years ago, I asked Arcadian to do a family-friendly version, which means 45 to 50 minutes, no intermission. And he did, but it was interesting that the next day after agreeing to do it, he came to me and he said, I think it's just going to be easier if I compose the music myself. And I said, was I going to say no? So he did, and you saw it. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, and it was a huge success. And I remember in the beginning I told him that while he's creating it, I want him to keep in mind potentially converting it into a full evening ballet, two-act ballet with an intermission. So I'm thrilled with what he's coming up with.
And why Beauty and the Beast? I mean, you were the one who came to Arcadian, who's mm-hmm. we're going to meet in our next segment. But why was it? Why did you ask him to do that show?
Because I thought it would be something that could be for the school performances, the second graders that we entertain for a week in October every year. They bus the kids in from the schools, and you know, it's something that they can relate to. Kids identify with it. It's not a stretch. It's not difficult, and it's beautiful story, you know.
So this is not Disney's Beauty and the Beast,
correct?
Correct. But will we still meet Belle and Gaston?
You'll have all the characters, including a few extras that he's thrown in. There's some jesters and Belle's sister Petunia.
I didn't know.
I think he made it up.
Okay.
I think.
Petunia, Belle's sister.
Right. And she's like the anti-Belle. Yeah, she's kind of sassy and
anti-Belle?
A little bit mean.
I Dream of Jeannie had that sister that was mean and on Bewitched.
Right. You're aging us, I Dream of Jeannie.
Oh, no. I knew you'd remember.
I don't know what that is. Let me just say. So, Robert, tell us about this whole collaboration between our orchestra and the Orlando Ballet, and why live music is so important to you. Because, you know, last we saw Don Quixote, which if you didn't see that, shame on you, it was fantastic. Thanks. Which was a great collaboration with our wonderful Orlando Philharmonic. Yes. But why is live music so important to ballet?
You know, the answer to that to me is all you have to do is sit down and listen to a CD and then go to the theater and listen to what it sounds like when it's live. And then that's your answer. Hmm. I mean, I don't know what else to say. There's no comparison.
There isn't, yet it makes it more complicated for the artists, I imagine. Yeah. Because one string instrument, you know, hiccups and then...
Yeah, no, there is that. And it's the same with any live theater. You know, we're all humans.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what makes it exciting.
It's exciting.
And
it's
the
live.
Other thing is every single performance is a little bit different in one way or another.
Mm. And that's a great thing to point out, though. So tell the listeners who may not know a whole lot about ballet... What does that mean for a live performance for a dancer? Say the conductor just had an extra Red Bull that day and the tempo is much faster than
that
it was
happens.
Night before. How do you adjust to that as a dancer?
It depends on what it is. I remember once I was dancing with ABT. We were on tour in Japan, and there's a ballet called The Leaves Are Fading, and the solo, the male solo, starts with an eye contact with the conductor, and you go, and one. And he didn't wait for me. He just started playing the music, and I wasn't ready.
Oh.
So I had to scramble to catch up. And sometimes the tempi, you know, some of these solos and variations and pas de deux are really tempo sensitive. Mm. So that's why the conductor has to come to various rehearsals to to see what, you know, what is going to be needed. So it's great. And the music he's come up with and the orchestration by Julian is stunning, absolutely stunning. I'm thrilled.
Mm.
Yeah.
What makes it especially beautiful for you?
You know, Arcadia's got a very cinematic mind.
Mm.
It's like when you look at his face and he's in the creative brain, you can see there's this screen, literally, that he sees so much all at one time. The music sounds at once cinematic, Broadway-esque, and symphonic.
Mm.
You heard a little bit of it
the
other day.
Yeah, and I know exactly what you said. I saw Arcadian's face on Saturday in rehearsals, and I saw that screen, but he was thinking costumes and lights and choreography and music and tempos, and all of it was happening at once on his face.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm curious, Robert, you know, you have such an accomplished career, and we're going to have you back and give you a whole show your own. But
I'll bring donuts.
Oh, I love donuts.
I'm kidding.
Robert's dancing in the studio, by the way. You know, we are
I'm between two fabulous people, and I'm very happy to be here.
Well, we're very happy to have you. And you are our very first guest ever.
Yes,
wow.
First guest.
What an honor. Seriously. No, I'm serious.
So you're such an accomplished dancer yourself, and now you're in the world of being an artistic director, and a great one at that. But I think it probably has to be a whole nother level of fulfillment when one of your people that you've been mentoring as a dancer then also gets to create such a masterpiece. What does that feel like for you?
It's very satisfying, because I've known Arcadian since, well, he's 20 now, so I guess 13 when I first got here. And, you know, I've sort of adopted him as a son along the way, for a lot of different reasons. And he's a really great, great kid. He's a great human being. And he has an amazing talent. So it's been very satisfying to mentor him, encourage him, just give him pushes, little nudges here and there, and a little bit of, you know, just help and guidance. And he's self-motivated. He's got, you know, it's very satisfying. You know, when you're a dancer, you only have to worry about yourself. Well, you know, I've just got to get myself into class, get myself into rehearsal, But as the artistic director, you're responsible for all of it, you know? And some people just are not interested to give to a lot of people, you know? And I'm very, very satisfied with seeing people realize their potential.
Mm.
And you were such a great help for him. If there's something that you could wish for him as he moves forward in his life, what would that be?
Continue to be a good person and just be happy.
Mm. Well, that's an interesting answer. I did not expect you to say that.
Why?
I expected you to say, well, the artistic director probably answer that I would expect would be that he would continue to be an accomplished dancer, an accomplished composer. And you said, I just want him to be happy.
Good person and a good person. Yeah.
That speaks a lot to your leadership, and it speaks a lot to the morale of your company, sure.
Thank you.
You didn't know you were giving such a good answer, did you?
I didn't. I'm patting myself on the back.
Literally.
I said the right thing.
No, but that I really mean that. That's important. You know, I mean.
That's probably why he works so hard for you.
Yeah, could be. Could be.
Well, I shut that down.
No, I don't know what else to say.
You just want you to talk about yourself, Robert. That's
no, you know, the thing is, life is short. And, you know, at this point, I'm 55. And you know, yes, I worked hard. Yes, I accomplished great things. And I feel like I still am. And it's very important to work hard, be disciplined, and also to be happy. You know, it's important to make sure that you don't lose that sight, you know, because it's easy to get, you know, really overly concentrated, you know, when you have such a passion for something like I do, you know, and I did as a dancer. So
especially in the arts, too, because we go into the thing that makes us happiest. And if we lose that,
I think
that's our fuel.
I think.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, you look real good for 55.
I thought that immediately.
I'm so glad you just told our whole audience how old you are, because you look real good. Second of all, you know, talk to us about what are your dreams still for Orlando Ballet? Maybe not specifics, but what are the things that you still want to accomplish with this great organization?
I want it to tour to to New York and to Kennedy Center. They have something called Fall for Dance in New York City, and they invite a lot of companies from around the world to share programs. And, the Kennedy Center has something called Ballet Across America, which is a similar thing. And so I want to do those things. I would like to make Orlando Ballet an important creative influence in the ballet world, you know, and also to continue to collaborate with other disciplines.
You know? Where do you see Beauty and the Beast going? Do you think it stops on May 1st, or what do you think?
You know, and until we see it on stage, there's just no way to speculate. I mean, I think there enough of what exists already that we see in the studio is pretty magical in terms of the choreography and the music. So there's potential for it to you know, be commissioned or to, you know, to be licensed in other places.
Wow.
And he will probably be offered commissions here and there to create other works.
And how does that work when you're getting major works from, if you're doing Nutcracker or you're doing some of these great works that are already out there, how do you get to perform those?
Typically you have to get the license to pay for the whatever it is, the Balanchine Trust, the Jerome Robbins Trust, you know, the Twyla Tharp organization, if you want to do their ballets. Nutcracker, the music, and I guess the traditional choreography is in the public domain at this point. Yeah, so it depends on where the work is in terms of its lifeline.
But then you have the freedom as the artistic director to interpret that traditional choreography however you see fit, right? So that's probably a large part of what you do as artistic director is take these works and make them Orlando Ballet's own.
Exactly. Like what Susan Jones did. She came in from American Ballet Theatre to stage Don Q, and she took a lot of what would be considered the traditional, you know, as a sort of a framework, and then she had her own touches along the way.
Mm.
You know?
We don't have too much time left, but I wanted you to talk a little bit about how people can see the improvisational ballet that you sometimes do. Tell us about that.
Oh, Uncorked.
Uncorked,
yes. Yes, Uncorked. Uncorked has proven.
Either one works
okay.
for us.
We are don't judge
real,
me.
We aren't real fancy around here.
We're common.
What we do is we basically, you know, you come to the Abbey and you get a glass of wine. That's why it's called Uncorked. But it's also called Uncorked because we basically take you into the studio and show you the process of doing choreography. And so you see the person making up the steps in the process, and you also see the dancers learning it for the, you know, in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that has turned out to be so amazing to people to see how long it takes to develop a passage of information, but how quickly the dancers get it together and actually make it look great.
As if it had been rehearsed and rehearsed.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah, someone said to me once, you're not going to tell me that you didn't practice this or prepare for this. I said, no. As a matter of fact, I don't even tell
the... I've seen it before, and it's hard to believe that, but it's true. You really haven't practiced
it. Well, you know, the day of a ballet dancer starts every day with an hour and a half technique class.
Wow.
And so that they're learning something in the moment. The teacher gives a structured class, but every exercise is a little tiny bit different.
So they're
always
learning.
Three today. They have to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the it's part of what they're required.
Mm. When is the next Uncorked?
Next year, next season, sometime in I want to say late September or early October.
Okay.
I don't have any of that information.
And if anyone wants to find out what's going on with Orlando Ballet, where do they go?
Go to www.orlandoballet.org.
One more time?
www.orlandoballet.org.
Fantastic. We can find out all about what you do. Thank you for all the beauty that you add to Orlando.
Well, thank you guys so much for inviting me.
Will this be the last thing that they can see, Beauty and the Beast?
This is the end of the season.
End of the season.
Yeah.
And when does the new season start up again? Like, when will we see Orlando Ballet back?
Our next performances will be in the end of October.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So tell us, you know, we know that you are a great leader, and every great leader surrounds themselves with wonderful people. Do you want to give anybody a shout out? You know, people can listen to Magic 107, but they can hear this in iHeartRadio all over the world. Is there anybody you want to give a shout out on this show today to just say thank you?
In the world?
In the world.
Wow, there's so many people to thank. Thank goodness I have so many people to thank.
Thank goodness you have only about 10 seconds.
No, go
ahead. I can't think of anybody.
You want to thank?
Who inspired you?
Who inspired me?
Who mentored you the way
oh,
you
there's
were
so many. You know, the very first school where I started was in Cocoa Beach. It's now in Merritt Island. It's the Dusage Dance Studio. Those people gave me scholarship. They took me to New York. They helped, you know, Liz Bevilacqua and Al Packard. Absolutely. Beautiful people.
Oh, there's some names. So hopefully they can listen.
Yeah, I hope
every
so.
Every good leader. So Beauty and the Beast, so. The artistic director of the Orlando Ballet, Robert Hill, we are so thankful you came on our inaugural show, and we will definitely have you back again. And you've been listening to From the Heart on Magic 107.7. Come back and listen some more as we meet Arcadian Broad and Julian Bond, the artistic geniuses behind Beauty and the Beast.
Everyone, we are so excited. This is our first show of From the Heart. I'm Mary Thompson Hunt, and I'm here with Joshua Vickery. And as we return, we are with Arcadian, principal dancer of Orlando Ballet. We're so excited to have you here, Arcadian.
Oh, thank you.
Yay. We're also here with Julian Bond, who is the brilliance behind the show that's coming up, Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
I wish I had like an echo, right. But it didn't do that. So
big hall. Yeah.
You guys are probably so excited about this. Arcadian, you are the composer. You are the mind behind this Beauty and the Beast. And Julian, you are the arranger and also the conductor. And you're the one who made the melody lines and the thoughts and all of that come to life for full orchestra. So tell us all about Beauty and the Beast, Arcadian.
Oh, well, where do I start? It started a long time ago, actually. We started with it in maybe 2013, I think. And it started off in the conceptual stages and then eventually was just kind of like a one-act idea for like a family program. And then it was received so well that Mr. Hill, the artistic director, he asked me to do a full two-act version. And prior for the one-act, I decided to compose the music as well because it was so difficult to find an existing score that got, besides the Disney version of Beauty and the Beast, besides that, to find a score that made the most sense and got the right feel for me. So I was like, I have a background in music. I've been playing piano since I was, you know, a wee little man. So I could kind of just shoot in the dark and see what happens. And it turned out to be very, very successful the first time. So now I'm doing the full two act and it's like, so long now, so I definitely needed help.
And Julian, how long is this ballet?
Oh my gosh, I believe they've timed it out to be around 2 hours and 35 minutes, including intermission.
Yeah. So 2 hours and 35 minutes of stuff that is stuff, brilliance, that has come out of your heads, right?
Right.
What is the process for something like that?
Well, for music, it starts off with me making like a skeleton form of what I hear in my head. My most knowledgeable faucet is piano, and Julian knows a lot more than that. So I wrote everything down with the general melody line and the bass line and a few other affectations on the piano, and then I made a MIDI file, an electronic file for him, and sent it over through Dropbox, and also had a PDF document kind of saying like what's going on in the scene and, you know, the musical breakdown and the scenic breakdown and what characters are involved and, you know, what type of feel I want from it. And then he just went on from there. And
Julian, you receive this, you get the PDF of the writing and you hear the music.
Right.
How was it for you to decipher that message and how did you interpret it?
I have to say, you know, Arcadian has been incredibly good at communicating with me. And, you know, he'll send me the PDF notes, which will have two pieces of information. Number one, a complete breakdown of the scene. And number two, a breakdown of the music, either by measure or by chunk, as to what he's imagining might be going on It's really been very clear, and it's been quite gratifying, actually, for Arcadian to come to the orchestra rehearsals and listen to them playing it. And I'll look over at him, and he'll have this big smile on his face, and he'll be saying, yes, that's what I was thinking. Yes, yes, exactly. Yes, yes. Which is a lot of fun. And every now and then we'll text each other, and I'll say, listen, do you want this to be really powerful or just grand? And he'll text me back. And so it's been great communication. And, mm-hmm. and you know, Arcadian has really, really mature concepts and ideas for this show. I've been very impressed and blown away the way he's used themes and programmatical music within the whole score. And so it's been a great working relationship with him.
Yeah. We read that you started piano at age 2.
Yes.
So
at age 2.
2.
Think, how do you start piano at age 2?
I think a crane was involved. I think it lifted me up onto the piano with my saggy diaper and played. No, I don't know. I guess from what I've been told, because I really don't remember too much from what I've been told, that I, you know, got up on this old upright piano that we had in our house back then, and I would just kind of hit random things and whatever. But then my mom had a teacher friend who heard me one day and was like, "You have you ever thought about getting him like checked out by a professional? Because he's not making, you know, random sounds. He's actually got some sort of mathematical progression to it." And so that happened, and it took a while. It took up, I guess, 2 years. So I was about 4 at the time when I got my first lesson. Mm. And it was by a lady who had a 4-year-old grandson of herself. So she understood what it was like to work
with a child
like that. Because most people don't take it till you're like 7 or 8.
Mm. Julian, you started at 7, right?
I started at 7, yes.
Mm-hmm. What took you so long?
I jumped on the bandwagon late. You smarter, Arcadian?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I started later, but I am 25 plus years older than Arcadian, so.
Oh, there you go.
You don't look it though, my friend.
I've had a little time to catch up, I think. So,
most composers and arrangers play the piano? I mean, is that something that really you start in that world and through that you begin to explore what it's like to bring that off the keyboard and onto paper?
I think as a composer, it's very handy to be able to play the piano because obviously you can play chords and you can play multiple lines. I think as an orchestrator, I've been very careful to stay away from the piano. In fact, I think I've maybe gone over to the piano twice during the entire weeks of orchestrating, because when you're playing the piano, it kind of restricts you to the 10 fingers you have. If you really want to write properly for orchestra, you kind of need to get away from the piano and think orchestrally, which is something I think that has been useful to Arcadian, because I know that he has played this stuff on the piano, and I can hear that he's yearning for some orchestral sounds, but he's got 10 fingers, you know. And so and so my job has to take this away from underneath his fingers and spread it out into an orchestra. So I don't think to be an orchestrator or a composer really, but certainly as an orchestrator, you don't need to be able to play the piano. Really,
That's actually interesting to know. You know, with you two guys, when you think, probably when our listeners think of composer and arranger, they think of all these, you know, scary dead guys, you know, or who are these hermits that just sit in their house, you know, and scribble away at the paper. And you're actually really two cool dudes for sure. How do you balance the creative side, the spark, the what you need with the I'm under a deadline and I've got to make this French horn sound. You know, how do you balance those two things? Because I've been thinking about that with, you know, seeing you in Don Quixote as a principal dancer and you were doing the art on stage. But I'm thinking he must be up till 4 a.m. every night creating.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, for me, I don't know. Probably for Julian the same. But for me, definitely when Don Q was happening, I had to do all day rehearsals, the 8 hours a day rehearsal for that. And then go home and work on the composition from there. And I would stay up until, oh God, I'm crack of dawn-ish. And then I get like an hour or a half hour of sleep and then go right back at it again. And then it only got worse once Don Q finished, because I was like, now I have more time to put into my computer and just sit there and just have my eyes melt on the screen, you know. And it was really...
It's called
taxing.
Being 20. The gifts of being 20.
It gets a lot harder.
That's what I've heard.
You felt bad about going to see a movie.
Is that true? Yes. You know, Batman versus Superman came out.
That's very important. I was waiting two years.
And you didn't sleep through it?
No, yeah. I forced myself. I was like, I'm not falling asleep. You know? So.
I have a question. We heard from Robert Hill that this is not the original Beauty and the Beast story. Tell us about this story that's different than what most younger people associate with the Disney version.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure that this was not a ballet version of Disney's tale. I wanted to, even though it was called Beauty and the Beast, and that's why everyone's able to relate to it, is because it's called Beauty and the Beast. I wanted to take not only what I thought that that version in particular missed, and I think it kind of, I kind of missed the rose factor and how important it was. You know, it's like, it's the prince's slash beast's lifeline. You know, it's just an elaborate hourglass, and I thought that was kind of lost in the film. So I did my research and went back to the original French tale. And then I found some of the Brother Grimm tales about it, and then also some really sketchy versions of it, like over in Japan or something. And I tried to take everything, and then
if you're listening to Japan, we don't think you're sketchy.
Right,
we just found
for sure. No, but it was like the way that, because you know when you go on those some websites and it takes you through all these backdoor portals. So I was like, oh man, this is kind of weird.
It gets dark, but yeah. Is there a specific plot that you can concisely tell us that is something we would never see in the Disney version,
mm-hmm.
that we'll see in your ballet?
I would think that the fighting between Gaston and Beast, and pretty much throughout all the villagers and the magical objects as well, I wanted to make it more cinematic and take away from the cheesy, get away from the cheesy stage fighting a bit. So there's some really almost brutal moments for, like, especially younger kids, like, you know, some really loud punch effects and everything, and some like snapping sounds. So that could probably be, you know, associated with bone cracking or something, or something. It has that like dark feel towards the end, which I wanted to get because that's where everything's like coming to a head.
Yes.
And where all the magic is building, and then all of a sudden it's like this void, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's a little different. And I added a sister for Belle.
We heard she's the sassy sister.
Yeah, she's
right?
The sassy
she's the mean sister.
Yeah, Petunia. Pretty much. Petunia, yeah, that's what I called her.
We love that.
Yeah, so a few things that are different, but I think the fight is a pretty big factor.
So, Julian, I'm curious, you know, you not only got to work with Arcadian to make it really come to life through his eyes, but you also are getting to conduct the work with our orchestra. Talk to us about that. I mean, it's one thing to see it on paper, but then to be there and be the wand, the baton that really brings it to life. And that must be so satisfying. Talk to us about that journey.
Oh, well, it's an incredible thrill. In fact, I'm going to get to conduct it in the Dr. Phillips Performing Arts Center, the Disney auditorium over there, which I've been into to have a quick look at. And it's quite a magnificent venue. That's going to be an amazing experience, I'm sure. But, you know, for me, there's nothing quite as thrilling as the first time I raise the baton and the orchestra starts playing and I'm going, yeah, this is exactly what... No, see, the thing is, for each one of these tracks that I orchestrated for Arcadian, I also provided a demo, which was really just a mechanical, computer-generated demo that he could then rehearse to and choreograph to. It's not quite the same as listening to the live players, and it's just... It's a different world, and it's very thrilling, and the relationship that I've built with the orchestra has been extremely satisfying. They're an incredible bunch of musicians, very talented and yet so kind and sweet, and have been giving me feedback and all kinds of things. So it's the whole experience has been really wonderful.
Oh, we wish you so much luck when you get out there too. You're going to have a blast.
Thanks.
What's it like when you're conducting a full orchestra and everything's going beautifully and you're in the zone? What does that feel like?
You know what? It's really hard to get truly in the zone because you're constantly on the lookout for,
yeah.
And especially
danger ahead.
Yeah, and especially what I love about this, as opposed to maybe a musical, is that with a musical you're constantly having to be aware of what's on stage and follow cues from actors. The great thing about this, it's 2 hours and 20 minutes of actual music that's just continually running, and the dancers follow the music. So I don't have to be too aware necessarily of timing on the stage. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to at least relax a bit and go into the music, but you're still constantly on the ball, constantly just checking balance and making sure. I think maybe by the last performance I might be able to chill a little bit. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. just a hair. But.
Mm-hmm. So Arcadian, you know, when you think of Beauty and the Beast and you think of what people have in their mind, they're probably picturing elaborate sets and mm-hmm. beautiful costumes. Tell us a little bit about that. Will we experience some of that in the show?
Yeah, I hope so for sure. But no, when my initial thinking of this was I had two routes. I had to go the grand elaborate way and make everything feel like it's a grand experience, or go into the more minimalistic contemporary version. And even though the minimalistic contemporary version is more Orlando Ballet style, because we do a lot of contemporary work, I wanted to do something a little different for that reason. So I was like, all right, we're going to go as grand as possible. And I started composing the music, and it ended up being really grand when I got the first demo back from Julian. And it was just this huge, sweeping, romantic, and haunting tone. And I was like, okay, then this is definitely the route that we're going. So there's going to be hopefully lots of great sets, because what we did last was Don Quixote, and we had ABT's sets from there shipped down here. So we can't, you know...
ABT.
American Ballet Theater. So we can't go down from there.
We can only go up. The bar has been set.
Yeah, so it's only an upward climb from there. So we have to have the awesome sets. And I know our costume designer, Eddie Frank, is being really awesome with designing his costumes and everything. So
Arcadian has said, go big or go home for this show, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we think about this show next week. It's going to be at 8 o'clock on Thursday, the 29th, 8 o'clock on Friday, the 30th, and at 2 o'clock on Sunday, the 1st, at the Dr. Phillips Center. Mm-hmm. And when this premieres on Thursday night for the first time, or mm-hmm. Friday night for the first time,
did I
say that right?
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah. When this premieres, where will you be?
Well, I'll hopefully be able to watch it in the audience.
Will you be in the audience?
I'll probably start off talking to people on stage, and then I'll make my way around to introduce the show and everything, and hopefully sit back and enjoy from the audience standpoint.
And if people want to get tickets, where do they go?
They go to the drphillipscenter.org and find the Beauty and the Beast tab and buy your tickets for whatever day you desire.
Fantastic.
Well, Arcadian and Julian, we are so very proud of you. This arts community is so very proud of this collaboration mm-hmm. between your minds and CFC Arts and Orlando Ballet. And all, please come join Arcadian and Julian and Mary and I at the Beauty and the Beast at the Dr. Phillips Center next week. We'll be cheering you on and supporting you. And thank you so much, listeners, for tuning in today to our inaugural show of From the Heart. Mary, it's been so fun. This is going to be a great journey. We love it. So tune in next week, Sunday night at 11 o'clock here on Magic 107.7, as we learn more and experience more about this beautiful arts community. See you next time.